So I'm very happy to welcome you here today to the Melbourne Institute Economics Forum, specifically on sustaining China's growth in an uncertain global economy. And we have a number of distinguished speakers from China and our own Ross Garneau, who will be giving us additional insights into growth possibilities in China. And I'd just like to welcome you all to the Economics Forum this afternoon. Thanks very much. So we'll have a number of speakers giving us an overview of their personal insights into the growth situation in China during the forum. And being the host of the Economics Forum, the Melbourne Institute, of course, has about 5 minutes of shameless self advertisement. I'd like to sort of take about 5 minutes of your time just to sort of go over some of the things that the Melbourne Institute is currently active in. So I'm sure you know us all from the University of Melbourne. We have various kinds of very obvious research activities, and one of the avenues of finding out what we've been up to is of course through the Melbourne Institute News. You can see here's a copy of the latest issue of the News. The Melbourne Institute is celebrating its 50th year this particular year, and sort of the current news, the newsletter addresses this particular issue. Not only that, but we've come out this year with the first wave of the homeless panel, The Journeys Home, and this is alluded to briefly. Our own Australian Economic Review is chugging along. Additional papers are coming out all the time. This is something, of course, that we at the Melbourne Institute are very active in. Quite large in the news this week was the seventh statistical report based on the HILDA, our own Australian household panel. And you might have caught Roger Wilkins just this last week on TV and radio giving interviews about the latest statistical results coming directly out of the HILDA. So, of course, we're a research institute, and we're constantly producing fact-based, evidence-based research, typically based on our own HILDA Australian household panel, but other panels such as the MABEL, which is a doctor's panel, and the Journeys Home, which is a homelessness panel, and also based on our own macro data sets, typically used such as the CASEY. So these would be sort of the newest research results coming out of our research institute on a continual basis. So specifically, the macro group is responsible for two main macro publications, the Indices of Economic Activity and the Survey of Consumer Sentiment, sort of based on also the CASEY. And so if you're interested in subscribing to these reports, you can go to our webpage and find additional information. And these would be sort of timely changes in expectations, economic expectations. So as you can see, we're very active in economic forums, and we have two coming up, looking at Australia, still the land of the fair go, and paid parental leave, all coming up within the next several weeks, and our own Roger Wilkins and Guillaume Kalb will be presenting there as well. So Roger Wilkins would be the deputy director of the Australian HILDA panel, and Guillaume Kalb would be the division chief for our labor group. So note these dates in your calendar. You may want to attend these in Canberra. And I guess a tag along to this forum today, on the 20th of July, there'd be another conference on China, and our very large economic and social outlook conference will be held in November, and indeed to celebrate the 50th anniversary of our institute. In December, there'll be a special economics conference as well. So I just to make you all aware of sort of the comings and goings at the Melbourne Institute, upcoming Outlook and various forum conferences. We're very interested in having your active participation at these conferences, but let's just move on to the conference at hand today. And so, originally, the director of the Melbourne Institute, Deborah Cobb Clark, was going to be hosting this event. Unfortunately, due to a very nasty cold, she can't be holding this today, and so I've come in her stead. And I'll be jointly chairing with Ross Garneau the remainder of the forum. So I think, I guess at this point, I'll ask Ross to come on up, and he'll chair the first part of the forum with the various speakers, and I'll continue on in the general discussion. So, Ross Garneau.
Thanks, John. Will I ask the members of the panel to all come up, or come up one by one and just for questions have us all here? What works best? Yeah. Okay, we'll come up in a way that allows my colleagues to eat something in the course of the lunch. Welcome, everyone. The China development story is a rapidly changing one. We've been meeting each year like this to discuss recent developments, and there are always new things to present, and that's certainly the case today. The international economic situation is at a very important pivotal point, with the old developed countries still growing on a much lower trajectory, undergoing stagnation, many of them in recession, those that are not in recession experiencing relatively slow growth, and we're still living with the aftermath of the great crash of 2008. But we may be living with something of greater longer-term significance than that, and that's the movement of the old developed countries onto a lower growth trajectory. Global growth has not been so slow since the immediate aftermath of the crash. Of course, the whole world went down with the North Atlantic countries at the end of 2008 and first half of 2009. But by the end of 2009, China, after a huge fiscal and monetary stimulus, was growing strongly again. And India was growing almost as strongly as before the financial crisis. Indonesia had returned to growth in the 6 to 7% range. They're the three big developing countries. Brazil returned to reasonably strong growth. And most interesting of all, for those of us who think development is most importantly a story about raising incomes of the lowest income people on earth, the change in trend of African development at the turn of the century has continued, unaffected by the crisis and very substantially boosted by Chinese demand for products and Chinese investment and development assistance into infrastructure and resources. So in the countries that are not in civil war or civil disorder in Africa, and despite the headlines, that's a majority of the countries, growth has continued on a much higher trajectory, 6, 7%, the trajectory of the post 2001 period, very different from the second half of last century. With the stagnation continuing in the developed countries, a lot of the emphasis on assessment of where the world economy is going falls on the big developing countries, first of all China. And in China we see the wearing off of the stimulus and so a movement to more moderate growth. That new change of trend was promoted by a deliberate policy, a deliberate strong fiscal and monetary tightening in 2011 in response to inflation being uncomfortably high. When we talked last year, it was in the range of 5-6%. Equally important in the minds of the monetary authorities, asset prices were rising very strongly, and in particular, real estate assets were thought to have become overvalued. So there was a deliberate slowing. Well, that's been effective. The question is whether there will be overshooting. There'll be the quarterly GDP numbers for China for this June quarter out today. The wise expectation is that they will show a further downward movement to perhaps around 7.5% in the year to the June quarter. But I won't try to. I'm not mug enough to give my own estimate hours before numbers come out. But certainly we've had a quite significant reduction in the momentum of growth over the last year. Inflation's come down 2.2% in the year to May, and still heading down. General expectation that it will go significantly below that in the year ahead. As I mentioned, the question is whether there will be overshooting. The government's already responded with a moderate loosening of fiscal and monetary policy in the last month, two small reductions in interest rates after a long period of tightening, and a moderate, a gentle replacement of fiscal contraction with fiscal expansion. So there's a reasonable expectation that something like growth in the 7-8% range will be retained, and the government has said that that's its objective, not to return to the 10% that characterised the first decade of this century. The focus today is going to be on longer-term growth issues. Chinese government, the People's Bank, the Ministry of Finance, the National Development and Reform Commission have shown themselves to be pretty good at short-term management to sustain growth. We think the most interesting questions are about longer-term growth, and sustaining growth is going to require two big rebalancing, or careful management of two big rebalancings. One is an external rebalancing. China, on the eve of the global financial crisis, had a current account surplus of about 10% of GDP, having risen from an average of only 2.5% in the 1990s. These huge surpluses haven't been a characteristic of Chinese growth in the reform era since 78, but they appeared in the early 21st century and became quite large in a global context in the immediate lead up to the financial crisis. Some people think that was causally related to that. I've got the famous comment of Nick Lardy at Brookings, or now at the Peterson Institute, saying that China was the opium pusher, forcing overconsumption on poor America. But it didn't make much sense for China or for the rest of the world to have such large current account surpluses. Since 2008, there's been a deliberate attempt in China to moderate those. Guanan Ma from the Bank of International Settlements will go through the savings and investment story that lie behind that rebalancing, very substantial shift in the balance between investment and savings that's moderating the external payment surplus. The other big rebalancing is in the labour market, where the Chinese growth, the very high growth of the reform era, has contained a high element of expansion of total labour supply, and also an easy kick to productivity growth from movement of people from agricultural activities, where productivity at the margin was very low, into industrial activities. Well, Tsai Feng, the director of the Institute of Population and Labour Market Studies at the Chinese Academy of Social Sciences, and I have no hesitation in naming Tsai Feng as the leading authority on Chinese labour markets. We'll tell us the story of the rapid changes occurring in the labour market, where continued very strong growth in labour demand is crunching against a contraction of labour supply, with total labour supply reaching a peak, beginning to decline about now. Tsai Feng will tell us that story. China has entered what in 2004 Tsai Feng called as the Louisian turning point in Chinese economic development. Since then, real wages have been rising very rapidly. The sustainability of growth is now about the effectiveness of China in moving, in upgrading skills, upgrading industrial structure into higher value activities, and doing that at a far faster rate than any country has ever done it before, because of the extreme crunch coming in the labour market. Well, Tsai Feng will set the scene for discussion of that issue. We will have Xiaobo Zhang from the International Food Policy Research Institute in Washington, who will give us more detail on the adjustments that are taking place within the agricultural and rural economy within China. The Chinese development is not only about adjustment in the urban economy, but the huge movements of labour obviously are associated with huge structural changes in the countryside, and Xiaobo will give us unique insights into that. And then Wang Bijun from Peking University will share some insights from her PhD work on Chinese investment abroad. Chinese investment abroad is linked to both of the readjustments. It's linked to the upgrading of the value structure of domestic industry, but it's also linked to the macroeconomically to the deliberate encouragement of direct foreign investment abroad as part of a macroeconomic adjustment. Li Gangsung from the who's director of the China Economy Program at the ANU. We'll show how these various threads link together, and then I'll come back to close off the panel discussion. So to get things moving, I'd like to invite Tsai Feng to present to us.
Thank you, Ross. Thank you, John. Good afternoon. As Ross said, the China's economic story is a rapid changing one. So I'll give you some facts showing one of the fundamental changes. Let me start with demographic transition. Partly due to the one-child policy, but mostly due to the fast economic and social development, fertility rate in China has been declining very fast over time. Actually, in the early 1990s, the fertility rate slowed to very low, below the replacement level, that is below than 2.1. In this century, early this century, it further declined to only 1.5, as most Chinese demographers believe, although there has been different opinions, particularly from the government authority. As a long being in low fertility, the age structure of the population has changed as well. That is, after the rapid increase of the working age population, it started to slow. The growth rate of the working age population has slowed down, and from various official estimations, you will see the turning point of the demographic transition would be in 2013, that is next year. That is working age population, that is the ratio of dependent population to working age population will stop increasing. At the same time, the working age population will stop increasing, and the dependence ratio will stop declining. That is, it will reach the bottom, and then right after 2013, the dependent ratio will increase. As economists, we use dependent ratio as a variable of demographic dividend. That is, from next year, the demographic dividend will disappear. So we enjoyed demographic dividend for so many years, but it's suddenly disappearance will impact negatively on the Chinese economic growth. That's one thing. Actually, that's a supply-side story of the labor force. And as so far, the Chinese economic growth has been so rapid, so fast, the demand for labor force is still very strong. That is, every one percentage point of GDP growth will generate 0.3 percentage point of urban employment expansion. Therefore, as the supply of labor force slows down and stops, and continuing growth of demand for labor force, the result would be a labor market change. That is, the growth rate of demand for labor exceeds the growth rate of demand, supply of labor. And therefore, since 2004, we have seen the severe labor shortage, first in coastal areas, then spread it to everywhere in China, particularly the shortage for unskilled migrant workers. As a result of that, the wage rates of ordinary workers, particularly migrant workers, increased dramatically for the period since 2004. Annual growth rate in real term of wage rate of migrant workers is 15%. Last year, it was 21% in real term. So, so therefore, we consider the year 2004 as a Lewis turning point. That is, people perceive the labor shortage and a fast increase of wage rate. And then we also can identify another turning point as a demographic turning point for the year 2013. That is a labor force decline, and the dependent ratio will increase. That changes the comparative advantage of China. That is, we are losing the comparative advantage in labor-intensive industries. Well, as a middle-income country, we are not ready to gain comparative advantage in capital technology-intensive industries. We are in the middle. And then most people would estimate a slowdown of the GDP growth rate. Basically, most estimates would suggest the potential GDP growth rate will be 1.4 percentage point lower for the current five-year plan period than previous 10 years or even longer. And further, in about the 13th five-year plan period, that is between 2015 to 2020, one more or 1.5 more percentage point decline for the potential GDP growth rate. But that is only natural slowdown. It's not necessarily mean any middle-income trap. But if I suppose if the government are not willing to accept this lower potential growth rate, there will be policy distortions. In the forms of industrial policies, regional development strategies, and maybe stimulus packages. That would distort the prices of production factors, generating maybe overcapacities, and deviating the Chinese economic growth from its comparative advantage. In that case, in the long run, the sustainability of the Chinese economic growth would be harmed. In the worst cases, China is facing a risk of falling into a middle-income trap. In that case, the Chinese miracle everybody has seen for the past 30 years will disappear. So I stop here, and later I'm willing to answer any questions. Thank you.
Now, Xiaobo Zhang from the International Food Policy Research Institute, where I was closely associated as chairman of the board.